Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and I'm your host through our 12 Days of Doctrine. Today, on the eighth day of doctrine, Special Doctrine Division is giving to you, our listeners, a detention slip. We figured we were giving out all these nice, thoughtful gifts during the 12 days of doctrine, but we needed to throw you a curveball with the detention slip. As you might have guessed, today's gift is a nod from the Military Police Corps. In today's episode, Mr. Dave Flynn, Deputy Branch Chief for Military Police Doctrine, opens your awareness on the MP Corps. Here are the questions he's trying to tackle when writing doctrine. What relationship does the MP Corps have with the Army Criminal Investigation Division, or CID, now that CID is an independent federal law enforcement agency? How do detainee operations work in the maritime environment? And what should we have in doctrine to guide the construction of detainee facilities? Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
What should the listeners know about military police doctrine? What are you working on right now?
Okay, so earlier this year, we're super busy, as probably everyone is. Our big ADP 337 was published in January, as well as our 339.12, which is investigations. And that particular manual grew to such a size that now it's in volume 1 and 2. Volume 1 is publicly releasable. Volume 2 is CUI, so it has to be requested through APD. But the things that were big about the changes on that particular manual is trying to accurately capture what our relationship is now with CID.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of their techniques, a lot of their stuff came out of the book.
Because they're no longer...
Because now they're a specified proponency.
Okay.
So they have been separated basically from the MP regiment. But we still want to keep CID in our books because we have investigations that will ultimately or could ultimately lead to a transfer of the, I guess you could say, proponency for the investigation. And it could transfer to CID based on the level of whether it turns into a felony or not. We call it our capstone document, 339 MP operations. Is with the CAT commander currently for approval to go to publishing. I just finished the final draft adjudication comments for FM 363 detainee operations and initial draft comments for our DOT 10, which is police operations. And we just started the initial draft of security and mobility support, which is FM or ATP 339.30.
Can you talk... Sorry, you just spit too many numbers. Can you talk the one with that's with CAC-CG?
Okay, so 339. Of course, when the FM 3O published, it had to be aligned with 3O. So that MDO and large-scale combat operations were changed inside of FM 339.
Okay.
And then the other big piece is what I kind of just mentioned is... What does that relationship now look like with CID? So the book still has all of our primary missions in terms of military police. It just, CID provided quite a bit of language so that we could still keep them in the book. But just to specify that relationship of how the things will transfer now that they've become their own proponent.
Okay, gotcha. And then the second pub... that you talked about.
Detainee operations, right? The biggest thing in FM 363 is that we've reincorporated detainee backhaul in a maritime environment, right? So we kind of pulled from old MP doctrine, probably around the 50s, when it was still a thing. But also with when 3.0 published, it had a whole new chapter on maritime.
Yeah.
So we wanted to align FM 363 with that. And what was the best way to do that? I think the detainee backhaul piece using Army watercraft coordination with Navy? How do we actually get a detainee from one landmass to the rear to where maybe the core holding area is, or even further back where, say, a theater detention facility would be? How are we going to make that happen? I think we're still, we've made some suggestions in the manual, and we've even got a great graphic showing the backhaul. But I think we're still in the early stages of, you know, getting any sort of finalization on, is this exactly how it's going to look, right? Especially, I went to the distributed maritime Navy brief yesterday, and with them spreading out, now that creates another kind of variable for me to kind of work through. The other really interesting thing is, and we didn't put this in the book yet because it's still in the early stages, but the Center for Army Analysis is doing what's called the FEAT study. It's the Forge EPW estimation tool. And we also did an exercise at Fort Leonard Wood to create an it's called the EPOWER tool, EPW estimation tool. And so I think once we get to a point where we can make that a program of record, I think that that will inform commanders in the field to be able to do a little bit more thorough EPW estimation planning, either early in the conflict or prior to the conflict. Just because right now, I think detention operations is an afterthought once we go to war instead of planning for it up front.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You know, you're saying FM30, you know, is influencing this, specifically the maritime chapter. Got that. But I think there's a bigger conversation here of we haven't even thought about large-scale combat operations, like any unit, not just MPs.
Right.
Commanders of any unit. How often have we been thinking about...
So I'm gonna do, actually, if I'm allowed, I'm going to do a plug for the RAND Corporation, because in 2011, they published a study called Battle Behind the Wire, which is, it shows for every conflict that we've ever been in, how we've done detention operations and how it's always been an afterthought and then having to kind of play catch up to be able to actually maintain the detainees in conflict. But it's a really great study. And I think that particular study has influenced a great deal of my work, both before coming to Doctrine and now in Doctrine, with some of the variables that they identify to be able to properly plan for taking detainees, even in large-scale combat operations. I think a lot of the information that was presented was from World War II. So that enormous amount of detainees that they took during World War II, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.3 million, I think is really telling. And how will that impact us in the next big fight, right? So and there's a lot to work through, and it's really interesting to me. So hopefully in future iterations of 363, then maybe we can gain some traction on the estimation tool and then figuring out exactly how detainees will be backhauled in a maritime environment.
Yeah, that's, wow. Something I just haven't thought about.
Well, it affects everyone because, and you know, my boss mentioned it earlier in the forum, you know, this is not just an MP problem, because units in the front are the ones doing the fighting.
Yeah.
And they're going to be the ones that initially take the detainees. And they're even, you know, our requirements determination guys at the MISCO are working on a new system to be able to process detainees sooner electronically.
Okay.
So right now, usually it's a tag, and then they go back to the theater detainee facility, and then they're placed into the system, right? Well, now they're trying to get the system to move forward so it can be sooner, and then they can be tracking them electronically all the way back.
Yeah, why are we not doing that,
right?
You know?
Right, exactly. And I mean, but this has been an effort for probably a decade. They received funding finally for R&T for this. So hopefully in the next couple of years, we see this system being moved forward so that, you know, as soon as somebody's captured and the MPs have them, they're in the system. And then they can be adjudicated as quickly as possible.
Okay, so let me think aloud for a second. So we know agility is one of the tenets of FM3O, and that's really linked with tempo. So being a tenet of FM3O, we want agility, and we want to control the tempo. So do you think commanders are really considering detainees and how that impacts their tempo or their agility?
Right. Yeah. I think that's a really good point, right? Because I kind of alluded to it earlier, but it seems like there's a couple of different schools of thought that maybe our allied partners will take control of detainees, or there's not going to be that many in large-scale combat operations. Personally, for me, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think that we should still make that as important of a planning factor as the maneuver, because the maneuver is the ones that are going to deal with it first once the fighting starts, right?
So you've talked some of the historical research that you've done. Are there other organizations with which you have collaborated?
What's really interesting to me is that since moving over to Doctrine, I've been a lot more involved with the Corps of Engineers. They have a system, and it's called JCMS, which stands for Joint Construction Management System. And these guys are phenomenal, right? So every construction project that's identified as a project, they go in and they see make what it looks like, basically. And so for 363, they have developed a new theater detainee facility. We had to kind of scale the blueprint to get it to go into the book. But what's really amazing is they don't just do it on the large scale. They do it in terms of where it's broken down into 500-man compound, and then what does the cell look like, and then obviously we have high-risk detainees, so what does that particular structure look like? So when we're talking about collaboration, it's been really interesting to work with them. They not only have done the diagram for our theater detainee facility, but for a future iteration of police operations, they're working on what a detention cell looks like inside of a police station, inside of an MP station, right? So the amount of work I'm sure that goes into them guys making that has been remarkable. And it's only going to serve to make our doctrine better and then our processes better on the ground, actually, as we go through and conduct the operations or the missions for either policing or for detainee operations.
Awesome. So those diagrams are going in. Can you explain that? So that's a platoon leader, company commander, some commander can open it up and then say, okay, this is what we need to be building.
Yes. So it's the theater detaining facility is quite remarkable. So I'm not sure if I think it will serve as a basic guideline on how to position different types of detainees, more than it's going to look exactly like that on the ground, especially in an austere environment. I think it'll completely rely on what logistical assets we are able to get to make this thing happen. But I think it will serve as a great depiction on, if the theater matures, this is what we're going to work toward instead of that's the thing that's going to be made right away. Right. So we may have scaled down versions of this particular theater detainee facility, but in the reality, it's very thorough on where the processing will take place and where the different types of detainees will be housed and where, even security. So it is CUI, that portion of the book. So not publicly releasable, right? But I think that the MP should be in charge of that in the theater detainee facility. So they'll have access to be able to say, okay, where's our start point for building this thing? And, as the conflict matures, if it does, then, what do we got to get to be able to do this thing right? One of the big changes leading into writing the book is the joint used to have a detainee book, and then they rescinded that. So that's obsolete. And then they placed the information into JP331 land operations as in, I think it's Appendix E. So they have a whole appendix on what used to be a whole book. and that kind of guided us. And we have four categories of detainees. So you have EPWs and civilian internees and retained persons. And then we have a new category, which used to be called detained persons, is now called unprivileged belligerent. So, right. So going back to the original Geneva language, it matches some of the NATO stuff. So that's probably another important piece for people to know, is that when they're adjudicating the detainees, to make sure that they're processed into the correct category so that the appropriate housing, the appropriate type of guard is placed on that particular person, right? So
that was interesting.
Cool. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Just like writing new doctrine is a team effort, breaking doctrine takes a team. Without the Kerr and Special Doctrine Division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. Please don't forget to subscribe on Amazon Music, Apple, Odyssey, Audible, Spotify, or YouTube. Also, go ahead and follow us on social media at U.S. Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.